welcome to Random Gaming Talk. It's Entertainment Talk's podcast for video games. I'm your host, Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is Roberts. How are you?
I'm doing good. How's it going for you?
Going pretty good. Going all right. Yeah, having a good week so far. It's Thursday tomorrow, right? Yeah, Thursday tomorrow. Yep, going pretty good. I got a fair chunk to talk about this week for games, but what have you been playing?
Not a whole lot when I have had time to play. It's mostly 7 days. I'm up to day 28 now, and that's when things get interesting with the Horde Knights. Because we already had the dogs come in. Dogs are these, naked zombie dogs. You know the hairless cat? Imagine that, but a Doberman Pinscher.
Lovely.
And burnt skin. So pretty ugly. Kind of terrifying. They're not hard as an enemy type. They're just a lot shorter than all the other zombies. So they're easier to hit you, and they're a little harder to hit unless you got an angle on them.
Cool. Nice. So you made it up to 28 days.
Yeah, it's every 7 days they send a giant.
Oh.
Day that on the clock, on the real time clock, is 60 minutes, because anything longer than that, the day would take a day. I feel like it takes a day. So I got 28 in game days, which is about 28 hours into it. So.
Nice. Yeah, just reminded me of obviously 28 days later. So, of which I've seen all those three films. Cool. So let's go to. I did not actually prepare the thing. Of course, I played South of Midnight. I've now finished it. So for the first time this year, I can finally read out what I call my social media review. So this is basically just the piece of text where I briefly talk about the game online with, of course, a link to the review for the game. So I said, I absolutely love South of Midnight, a fantastic, well-paced, satisfying game to play, both for its combat and traversal mechanics. That plus a beautiful story with interesting characters, parts that reminded me of The Last of Us, and also a brilliant ending. So that's kind of my summary for that. Again, I know I talk about Last of Us all the time and all that sort of thing. I'm going to play a clip in a minute, once we get talking about this in a second, of what I actually mean, because there's like a line that reminded me of something, so I'll play that actual clip in a second. But what do you think of my social media review there?
You already finished it? Is it that short of a game, or did you just kind of speed through and ignore the collectibles?
There aren't that many actual collectibles, not the ones that I saw, at least. You basically, the two things I recall picking up is these letters that have been left behind, by people in the story explaining something that's happened, or you pick up these, light things that are sort of, they give you points for, your skill tree, so you can unlock more stuff, and as I said, I think it was last week, that you kind of, okay, so you click in the right stick and it will tell you where you need to go, but then sometimes it might look like there's a different path. Sometimes if you do bother to go that path, you'll get like a bigger light collectible that will give you like 10 points or 20 instead of 5 or 10, so that kind of thing. I basically just, because I kept really enjoying it, I just ended up putting a bit more time into it, so but I would, because there's 14 chapters, the last one is literally just like a 15 minute ending for the game, so there's basically about 13, so, because I did just start it last week, didn't I? So, but what do you think of everything else that I said there?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I've never played the game. The art style and the kind of, the janky jank of the movement kind of put me off onto it. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, loved it in the end. As I said, kind of on the review, because I believe I was, at chapter 9 last week? And I must have started it just after the week before's podcast, because obviously we do these on a Wednesday, at least at the moment. there's a lot of kind of, once you get to around chapters 10 and 11, things start paying off, things kind of like start accelerating a bit more. You know, those kind of late story parts of, well, stories, where you can tell, like, you know, the fruits of the labors are starting to kind of come together. So, I really, really enjoyed it up to chapter 9, and then it just kept getting better. So, and then the ending happened, and it is genuinely a point as well that I love the game up to chapter 13, 14, and then that ending just it was just the nice cherry on top of the cake kind of thing. It really just that pushed my love for the game even further, because I just really, really like how it ended as well, both from a gameplay standpoint, a story standpoint, and other things. So, because it could have been a point where I loved it up until the end, and then maybe the ending doesn't quite stick the landing. That can kind of happen, right? But it really did land itself very, very nicely. There's a post-credit scene as well. That's also really nice, like a nice little sort of where the characters are going to go next kind of thing. So, yeah, absolutely loved it. Gave it a, I'll be mentioning in the housekeeping, but I gave it obviously a strong must play. And yeah, didn't really, at least not any problems I remember per se. There's a few things I mentioned in the review of, there's the different, the three or four, I can't remember how many different ways the story is told to you. And there's one in there, I think I mentioned it last time, about like the book flipping thing. It wasn't done badly, didn't dislike it. It's just, okay, that compared to the other ways you're telling me this story, it's the one I have just the least preference for. But that's me being, you know, nitpicky and fair and sort of balanced. Although, as again I said on the thing, that you can tell when a chapter, because it's literally book chapters and you kind of see that happening, you can tell when a chapter is coming to an end, and then that nicely just concludes its point, and then you see the sort of flip of the page of the book, and it says the next chapter number, and then you kind of get the next fresh part of it, and that's just really well balanced and really well done. So, yeah, excellent, excellent game. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed that. If anybody, again, like I said, has got any feedback for that game, if you haven't played it, whatever else, of course you can write in here if you want. Which somebody did write in about, I should probably read this next actually, rather than bringing it up later. Josh wrote in and said, I'm guessing you saw my review posted a couple of days ago. It says, "What game do you think is better, Forspoken or South of Midnight?" South of Midnight's the better video game. But even when I was playing the beginning of Forspoken, or the, you know, the middle and the end, it has got a lot of that stop-start thing to it, which South of Midnight really doesn't have that at all. Both games do have kind of similarities. They're not really like the same game though, they just have certain similar things. And I'm not just talking about that you know, play as a black woman in both games. That's not what I'm talking about. But somebody who's in an unfortunate situation that ends up with abilities, and they have to be, you know, put into a strange situation. They both do those things differently, but there's kind of some similarities there. We probably won't get a sequel to either game either, so I'll have to find a third one that's similar. But yeah, from like a, you know, video game quality standpoint, South of Midnight's a better game, but I love both of them. So, in fact, I had an idea, because on the podcast I was briefly looking up about t-shirts. And what I might do, there's a company called Vistaprint. It's normal thing where, you know, you go online, you pick the size, the color, you put pictures on it, and I might get one that's got like Forspoken on the back and South of Midnight on the front, or the other way around. I just think that would be just a nice thing to do. So, yeah, in terms of, you know, because you said which one's better, if I were to say which one I like more, it's interesting because there was clearly a lot of eyes on Forspoken, right? Some of them very negative, and, you know, you can think what you want to think about the game. South of Midnight is very different, where, because I might go and actually look up reviews for this and see what people actually thought, because I don't really know what the consensus on this game is on South of Midnight. It was opposite, where it sort of, whether it's praise or negativity, this game just really didn't have a lot of opinions floating around about it. So they're both kind of different, but I love them both kind of equally. So, yeah.
Steam 9.0 IGN 8, Metacritic 76. So
Okay.
not bad
Pretty good.
reviews.
Yeah, pretty good. I gave it a 10. So there you go. Yeah. Did you say it was, sorry, what score did you say for IGN?
IGN 8,
Oh,
no real shock
so
there.
it's not a seven.
Metacritic review critics reviews 7.6, user review 6.7.
All right, let's see what that's all about. So after my time with Southwest Midnight, again, not going to say too much here because there is a review, of course, with a spoiler-free section at the start that you can go and check out. Oh, the clip I was going to play. Let me just get this up. I'm going to play this. I recorded like an actual video of it through my phone, so I'm going to play the part of that. Just pay attention to the specific dialogue that the two characters say. You're right over there? Okay, good. All right, one sec. Right, I'm just gonna play that one more time. Right, yeah, so I can't really give any context to the South of Midnight part there because that is it's spoilery, but only spoilery within the context of what the two are talking about. So this woman at one point said, "You have no idea what loss feels like." And as soon as she said that, I thought of when in Last of Us 1 and of course Season 1, when Ellie and Joel are talking in the place that they're in. And they're both talking about what they've both lost and things like that, right? And Ellie mentions the people that he's lost, and of course, because Joel's so hurt from the Sarah thing, even still 20 odd years later, and he says, "You have no idea what loss is." So not the exact same line, but similar kind of thing, and they're both talking about grief. So, and just to mention one more thing, I also said on the review, like, okay, if you're a video game or just any piece of media. And you make me think of Last of Us in assumingly a good way, then you've done a pretty good job. So, yeah. What do you think of the two different lines there about grief?
Yeah, I mean, grief is a common topic in games and stories about the warrior's journey. So I'm not surprised that they're fairly similar. It's a similar concept. And that gives me into a weird tangent. Have you ever seen that clip of Ed Sheeran when he got sued for a copyright on a riff?
I don't think so. No.
Well, so, yeah, so he got sued. He had to go into court because something a riff he played on his song sounded a little like a riff somebody played on another song, and he won the case by pulling up the sheet music of six other songs and playing almost that near identical riff. And he's like, "Hey, there's only so many chords. They're going to sound like each other at some point."
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. But yes, that's South of Midnight. So again, check the review if you want to see or hear, I suppose, more on that. Let's move on to my next game, another game I'm really, really enjoying, and I've literally just played a couple of hours ago and I've only played for an hour, is a game called Rematch. Now I think this is from the same developer that did Sifu. So Rematch is this. How would I describe it? It's like a third-person football game. So you know how you would see like FIFA and PES and the other small football games that are out there, and usually it's camera over the top or slightly to the side depending on if you move it, and it's basically you get the ball and you move around with pretty much just the left stick, but you can see the whole pitch, and it's the controls on it are much more simple. This is a very, very interesting one where. The camera's very low down. I think you can move it about because I did look at some camera options at one point, but I didn't quite like explore them because I'd like to zoom the camera out a tiny bit. That's my only kind of quibble qualm with it. But yeah, you have like completely different kind of controls. You have this kind of you have like a reticle that's on screen, and essentially, so you can't see behind you unless you kind of, you know, turn the camera around, that kind of thing. And when you get the ball, there's like certain ways to pass it, certain ways to shoot, there's certain ways to tackle. Controls are like completely kind of new and different to FIFA. Anyway, I ended up playing. I went through all the tutorial, all the practice stuff. There's still a bunch of stuff for me to probably practice on it. Then went into some quick online matches. So the tutorial itself did take a good like half an hour. And then the matches I played, I think was 6 minutes, although I did 5v5. So I don't know if it's different minutes for different things. Because I think it was 3v3, 4v4, and 5v5. I think that's what it was. And so you get about 6 minutes. I think when it gets to, because there's two games that I was a part of that I lost that were up to five goals. I think it does do a thing where it's like if a certain team scores five goals or something, it just kind of ends the game. But I don't know if there's different rules around it and stuff. Again, I've only spent about an hour with this game, so I don't know everything. I really, really started enjoying it quite a lot, and just, you know, when you're kind of playing an online game like that, and you're like game after game after game, and I was getting into kind of a really good rhythm with it. But it's such an interesting, doing a football game like that online, whether it's FIFA or something else, specifically when you're controlling just one player, because that's the difference with this, you're not switching between players. Although when there's a goal that happens, you get automatically switch to a different position. Not that the outfield positions make that much difference, because it's a bit of a free-for-all, but you do have a dedicated goalkeeper. They've got their own controls, all that kind of stuff. I would say with the controls, the goalkeeper thing works actually really quite well. So that was really good, like the diving and the tackling and all those sorts of things. It's an interesting mix, though, because it's got an arcadey feel to it, but is one of the more realistic sports arcade games I've ever played, because it's got kind of a realistic feel to it. But then when you do things like a stronger shot or a stronger pass, there's like the sort of power shot element to it, you know, the sort of arcadey type thing that comes along with that. And usually I don't like that when it comes to sports games. I think there was a couple of different sports games I played on the Switch that I really didn't like for that particular kind of thing. It's all, you know, animated characters, all that kind of stuff. I think you can customize your characters, although I've not looked into that. Essentially just play, I think it's red versus white, and it's interesting because the game start in matchmakes, finds a bunch of players, and you can click on red or white or captain. I'm not sure what happens if you click on captain or like that sort of thing. When I went in the first couple of ones, I just clicked on red. But it's like, okay, playing, you know, FIFA and that kind of stuff can be intense in its own way, but when you're in especially like a 5v5, so it's less people and there's less people to sort of pay attention to, and now it's like, oh, you're the one with the ball, you've got to make the right choice because everybody's looking at you, the opposition's looking at you, your teammates are all calling for the pass, can you make kind of the right choice? Which gives that nice real feel to it, because obviously that's what footballers would be experiencing in the real game. Because, okay, you've got the ball, your manager's looking at you, their manager's looking at you, there's a good tens of thousands of people looking at you, if not 100,000 people looking at you, people watching at home are looking at you, and it's like, you know, if you make the wrong choice, or there's a clear pass that was on but you decided to dribble forward, and then everyone kind of moans at you or whatever. So it's got that interesting pressure to it. But sometimes with that, it's a simple case of, okay, when you get the ball, sometimes just make a nice simple pass, just so that you've done your next kind of bit. I did come across, now this is a predictable thing, because football can be like this. There was, of course, a few teams I came across that they didn't really want to pass. People were trying to flick the ball in the air. And especially, like, someone gets to the edge of the box. There's two people calling for a cross. And you do, like, they do, like, a rubbish shot. And the keeper saves it. It's funny, because there's also, I think there is game chat on it. But nobody was actually chatting. But there's, the D-pad is used for, so there's four different ones. One of them is, like, well done or thanks or something. One of them's like, I'm sorry. And then the other one is like, we can do this kind of thing or whatever. And people were kind of using those to a good amount. So that was quite good. And there was a couple of players I came across that, like, they made a poor pass. They pressed the sorry button and I was doing that as well. And like when someone scored a really good goal, some of the other teammates were like, yeah, good job. And it's just that nice little motivating touch to it. Interestingly, I didn't find a button where it's like, you're terrible or something like that, because there was a few people making some really, you know, either really bad shots or bad passes or that kind of thing. But that's going to happen from time to time. But it's just not great in like an online game where people who are kind of open are calling for passes and you just take, you know, a greedy sort of bad shot. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to playing more of it. I don't know if they're going to do like seasons of content or like leagues or anything like that. At the moment, I just found Quick Play. So you get matched with like totally different people. So yeah, really, really quite enjoyed it. So I remember when I first saw it and I was like, oh, Sifu developers. And I liked Sifu a lot, by the way, especially when they added multiple difficulty levels. Really, really like Sifu. And when they added the easier difficulty, I actually bothered to learn like some combos and that sort of thing, and ended up being a really, really good game. So they're great so far. But I suppose it's an interesting creative challenge, right? To go from, can we make this fighting game, like this complex fighting game, to making this like third person football game. Must have been. And there's little elements, little bits of DNA of kind of the way you kick, and there's some interesting kind of maybe DNA in there that's carried over. So far, really enjoying it. And then it got to a point where I was like, oh, I need to come off of it because I need to make the podcast. So I will see what time it is once we've finished here, and maybe have a couple more games. But because I was on Game Pass and it happened to be on there. And I kind of knew some stuff about it, but I'd admittedly not paid much attention to it. Kind of booted it up. I thought, okay, another football game. Is this going to be another one that just falls by the wayside? Because, of course, FIFA, which we'll be talking about soon, just obviously dominates everything right now. But this is also not a game that... Because one of the problems with anybody doing a football game right now is EA has gobbled up all the licenses. This isn't one where you need any of that. Like, you don't play as, you know, Rashford or you know, current world players. You just play as your own customized player, and you don't actually really need real world players. Also, just keeping it just red versus white is, again, there's no reason for it to be anything else, really. So it's an interesting spot this game has kind of landed in. So really, really enjoying it so far. I'm quite enjoying it a lot. I did find, now I don't know what was going on, because again, I played about eight games, maybe. I don't know, I said there were 6 minutes, but some of them ended early because there was too many goals. In the first like 2 to 3 games, I noticed I wasn't getting passed to a lot. I don't know if it was just me or if it was that sort of is it just me kind of thing. And then after those 2 or 3 games, I was getting passed to a bit more, but maybe I wasn't like positioning myself well, or I was calling for the ball at bad points, or I don't really know. So, although there was one point when one of my teammates was in trouble when I was in goal, and you can click in the right stick to like call for the ball, and your character shouts like back to keeper, and they did actually pass it back to me, which is very unusual. So it depends, it's going to be a case of who I come across and who I'm in a team with, because some of them are just really, really greedy and don't pass, and then some of them, because there was this one match that I got into where the other team was like passing, coordinating and running and calling for each other, and then my team was just sort of like boot the ball up the pitch, whoever gets it first take a shot, and it's like that's just not really the way to play this. So yeah, I suppose it depends on what teams I'm going to come across and things like that. So, but I'm curious to get into more and to see, I guess, where this game ends up going, I guess. So, but I do like as well that it's not just another top-down football game. You play this completely differently to FIFA. It's very much like focused on the camera. And it's interesting to kind of, like, when you're trying to line up your shot and you have got the circle on the screen and you've got aim that at the goal. So yeah, don't know that anybody's really made a football game like this before. So anyway, have you seen any of this game, or what do you kind of think of it?
I have seen it advertised. I did check it out. It's Rocket League, but with people. That's all it is. Rocket League's a very
That's a
well-known
good
formula
comparison,
game.
actually. Yeah.
And obviously, the developer that did Sifu did their own thing. They did their own mechanics, their own game engine. But yeah, it's Rocket League, but with people.
I'd agree with that. The only thing I'd say, though, I remember when I played, because I didn't play that much Rocket League, and it felt quite chaotic. This can still be a bit chaotic, but you haven't got multiple cars like on the sides of the stadium thing. Like you do have people in its boots on the ground, and while you can obviously boot the ball up in the air, which you can do in a real game anyway, it felt a bit like that, but just more controlled as well. So. That's quite a good comparison. So yeah, I'll be playing it more, and again, just see where this thing goes. So anyway, all right, that's what I've been playing. Let's get into some housekeeping, and we'll see you for that in a minute. Hi there. If you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link, which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system, which is usually in the bottom right-hand corner, to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there. If you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcast that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for two episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch two episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. All right, recently on Entertainment Talk, of course, we're putting out refreshed Breaking Bad podcast for season 3. That's been happening weekly now for 9 weeks, because this week's episode is episode 9 of season 3. It's up to episode 13, and remember, once David comes back from holiday, in and around September, I think he said, we're going to jump into season 4, which will be the next season, of course. So there's been a good chunk of people listening to these, actually. So I wasn't sure what to kind of, because I was more kind of just putting these out to kind of, make sure the episodes are working. I didn't know how many listeners we'd get from it, because we've already put these out once before a few years ago. So if you were there listening to them then, you wouldn't need to listen to them now. I don't know. But yeah, the numbers have been pretty good on it, which has been really nice as well. So for those of you who are listening, and there is a good chunk of you, will be. I should probably put, once we get near the end of posting season 3 episodes, put a little podcast note in there, and just letting people know what's going on. Anyway, that's the Breaking Bad podcast at the moment. Speaking of South of Midnight, of course, I gave it, like I said, a strong must play rating. Spoiler free, spoiler split, the usual deal with that. So you can listen to the first half if you've not played the game, which I recommend that you do. It is on Game Pass. It's not on PlayStation 5 yet, although it will probably come to PlayStation within a year or something. But you can buy it Game Pass. Well, sorry. Get it Game Pass or buy it a la carte, both there, and you mentioned Steam as well. and also probably, yeah, Game Pass on PC, I would imagine. So that's South of Midnight. Over on Gaming Talk last week, of course, we talked about Naughty Dog, and they put out a chronological version of The Last of Us 2 through a new update. We talked about Cyberpunk, and I talked about South of Midnight, but as well as a whole bunch of other stuff. Over on some recent film reviews, my Don't Skip review for Jurassic World Rebirth, because I haven't gone to see Superman yet. That should be this weekend, hopefully. But yeah, my review for Don't Skip review for Jurassic World Rebirth, so you can check that one out. A little clipped part from last week's, or sorry, 2 weeks ago, I think, the podcast where we talked about Neil Druckmann and Halle Gross exiting writing duties on The Last of Us Season 3, because of course Season 2 has already come and gone. They both work at Naughty Dog, and they're both doing work on what they're doing over there. Over on other TV season reviews, I did a must-see review for Ironheart Season 1, so you can check that one out as well if you want my thoughts on that. Gaming Talk from a couple of weeks ago, which is what that podcast piece is from. We talked about Naughty Dog, GTA, and I talked about Xbox. Over on some other film reviews, strong must-see review for 28 Years Later, speaking of mentioning 28 Days, which is how long you'd survived on 7 Days to Die. So yeah, 28 Years Later, the third of those films, so really enjoyed that, and there's supposed to be a new one in about 6 months, so that should be very fun as well. And that's
what are they calling it, 28 and a half years later?
I did wonder that when they first announced the sequel. I think it's 28 Years Later Bone something. It does have like a subtitled name. I can't remember what it is right now, but because they skipped months. They didn't do a 28 months film. They did days, weeks, and then years.
No, they did. So, 28, it was 28 weeks, sorry.
Yeah, days, weeks, yeah. And then years. So, not sure why they skipped weeks, but yeah, eventually you'll... Unless they do 28 decades later, and then 28 centuries later. Anyway, so that's what we've been doing recently on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Let's move into some news. Alright, let's get into quite a few rumour mill things recently. This is also rumour mill as well, so the information I'm about to read out might not end up being true, and it also might be. So take that with the usual pinch of salt. This was posted in regards to Intergalactic: The Heretic Prophet, which of course is the next game from Naughty Dog, written and directed by Neil Druckmann, and of course also worked on by other people as well. There's a few bullet points here. It says launch window is set to be late 2026. Game is said to be The Last of Us Part 2 meets Dark Souls. Has big areas with layers of travel. Contains planet side travel with glider, parkour, and faith anchors where you can fast travel. Gameplay is said to be similar to God of War 2018. It says you can piece together parts... you can piece together parts of the story by finding items, collectibles, journals, and exploring. I don't know what this next bit means. It says Neil Druckmann's script is said to be heavy. I imagine the script is big, but I don't know what heavy specifically means. It says lighting engine is insane. And it says the next trailer is said to be at the Game Awards for 2025. That last one makes sense to me, actually. So, yeah. I was going to say, unless we see some gameplay this summer, but I think if that was going to happen, that would have already happened because it's already the summer. So, which of these do I think is correct or whatever? Launch window, late 2026. I would say, yeah, probably late 2026, early 2027. I think probably the latest is like now, sort of summer. Like May, June-ish for 2027, maybe. So I would put it in like a six-month thing, maybe, from... I mean, I don't think the game will come out in actual December. But if it's a full release, or then getting pushed in between... Somewhere between there and, summer 2027, that is what it feels like it might do. So, Says game is said to be Last of Us Part 2 meets Dark Souls. I've seen some similar rumors to that as well, and I think, because I've listened to Neil talk about this game on 4 different interviews, I think he said something similar at some point. Again, I'm not trying to put words into his mouth, but he did say the gameplay is going to be like sort of taking what Last of Us 2 did, and it's going to be deeper than that. So I'm kind of wondering if, not that it's the way you're supposed to play, but in Last of Us 2, because you can do interesting like one-on-one combat, because that's where the dodging mechanics come in and stuff like that. Because now we've only seen like one robot from this game, right? Like the one that Jade goes to hit at the end of the game, and it doesn't look like a small robot, but it's not like a, you know, tall neck from Horizon or something. I wonder if maybe you take the sort of 1v1 combat from Last of Us 2, and rather than sort of, okay, you can take on 2, 3, 4, 5 people in The Last of Us if you're, you know, good at doing that or whatever, because especially when you can, let's say, shoot someone in the knee, they get damaged, you grab them as like a hostage, and then you start shooting other people, those kinds of things can happen. You can also obviously take cover and pick people off and stuff. I wonder if you take the specific 1v1 gameplay that Last of Us 2 had, and you sort of do a Dark Souls version of that, where, like, let's say instead of you coming across groups of robots, and this is just me guessing, I know about as much as anybody else listening to this. I wonder if you take the 1v1 thing and you essentially scale that up, so you have like lots of mini boss fights, maybe. Because that robot that Jade was going to go up against, it didn't look like a small deal to deal with. So I wonder if you're just going to get more detailed one-on-one things. I suppose that's possible. So that's just my guess for how that will work. And no, I don't think this is going to be sort of, Naughty Dog's making a Dark Souls game. I couldn't see, maybe I'm wrong, I couldn't see Naughty Dog doing the kind of, hey, you have to survive from this rest point to this rest point, and if you die in anywhere between that, you lose your souls and you go back to the most recent rest point. There might be bits where you go back to your ship and you do upgrades, but I can't really see this game having rest points. For example, same way, you know, Bloodborne and Lies of P and all those sorts of games work. Again, I could be wrong about that, but that doesn't feel like the Naughty Dog thing to do. So, but I could be wrong. It says has big areas with layers of travel. That also makes sense as well. If you go from Uncharted 4, Lost Legacy, and Last of Us 2, that's when Naughty Dog started experimenting a bit more with open areas. Because if you go from Uncharted 1, 2, and 3... You could walk around a bit, but you didn't really have like explorable areas. I'm not talking about, you know, Zelda open world gliding for hundreds of miles. I'm not talking about that. But just sort of the areas a bit wider and a bit more explorable, or you get given a few different options to like approach a building from. So again, if you're supposed to be on planets that that nobody's heard from for, I think it's 600 years, Neil said, I wouldn't expect there to be much on this planet, but then we don't know why communication's been cut off and all that sort of thing. But yeah, I wonder if they take the progress they've made from, again, Uncharted 4, Lost Legacy, Last of Us 2, and because all three of those games have got a similar kind of, not open world, but sort of, here's a slightly bigger area, but you still have your linear objective. You take that and just expand on that a bit more. That would be interesting to see. It says contains planet side travel with glider, parkour, and faith anchors where you can fast travel. I can see that working in like a Ratchet and Clank sort of way, like how you could, like maybe you're fast traveling between different planets, possibly. Bit like in some, can't you do that in the Star Wars games? I think you can, can't you?
Not in the Jedi Survivor game.
I thought you could. I thought it was one where it's like you had, but with that and with the Ratchet and Clank games, it's kind of a bit more, okay, you can go to this one, this is where your main objective is, but if you've now picked up this quest item, you can now go back to this other planet and speak to so and so to complete a side quest. I wonder if this might be that a bit more, like fast traveling between planets. And again, if you've got lots of big open kind of areas and you've got more futuristic tech, those sorts of space travel things, because we've already seen a little bit, arguably, of fast travel where Jade's like almost booting her ship up to do like a warp speed thing. It seemed like that anyway, or at least like, you know, the boosters that she was using at the end of that trailer. So I imagine you could get something similar in there. So gameplay is said to be similar to God of War 2018. Again, if you kind of take the more focused one-on-one combat, I can see. Again, you know, you can take influences from other things. So maybe with like the two newer God of War games, if you take that, you make the combat more detailed and have like, I mean, God of War is not really like a Dark Souls game, but there's some DNA in the sort of combat, like the parrying and, you know, things like that. So I could maybe see that fitting in. This next one was one that people were kind of concerned about a bit, about sort of. Like collecting journal entries. Now the thing is with this, because when you look at the Crash games, they're very much kind of, you run from the beginning to the end of the level, it's very linear, there's not really any dialogue per se in those levels, and then once you complete the bits, you get certain dialogue bits and pieces. You go to Jak and Daxter, and it's, okay, you have more cutscenes, and then kind of, again, slightly open areas, but it's still kind of linear, but it's a collectathon. And then you go to Uncharted, and I think that's where you're able to start picking stuff up, but then usually you have a companion with you or something like that, and they will be talking to you, and then you'll have cutscenes. And then Last of Us, because obviously the state of the world that is, because people have died and left notes and stuff like that, that's where that started picking up more. But then again, you had kind of, especially the first game, it was Joel and Ellie and that, and they were talking to each other and building that bond the whole way through. So imagine if you go through all of those, and then you go to Intergalactic, because Neil has basically described this game as sort of, you're on your own bounty hunting, the companion thing isn't really a thing in this game. So if it's a case of like a Last of Us situation, where it's, okay, an apocalypse, people have lived in an area and left things behind, and there's the environmental storytelling, I suppose if you take that and then you go to a planet which has been abandoned and not heard from for 600 years, I imagine there will be a similar thing of kind of, people were here, there's environmental storytelling, notes got left behind, nobody's with you because you're a lone bounty hunter or whatever Jade is going to be, and you tell your story that way. So as long as it feels natural in that way, so we'll see how that goes. Neil's script being heavy, I don't really know what that means. Maybe the script is very big, but I don't know what it means by heavy. So, lighting engine, again, new PS5 games, especially first party in-house new PS5 games, I expect most of them to look good. So, and this is next trailer to be at the Game Awards. That's where I think we're going to see this game next. I don't think we'll see it before that. So, anyway, what do you think of some of these bullet points here?
Well, generally, when somebody describes something like that, something artistic, something entertainment, as heavy, it generally means the writing is emotionally heavy. Best example I can give is think about towards the end of Toy Story 3, mm-hmm. when all the toys are dangling over the near destruction of the, totally not an analogy, the pits of hell.
Sure. Yeah.
That scene, that is a heavy, heavy scene. And obviously they lighten it up for the actual ending. But yeah, he's saying it's going to be heavy. Just sounds like it's going to have a lot of emotional weight. If you want that now, play Expedition 33. Oh my God, that there are moments that are so heavy. People have cried. And I know it sounds like I'm just hyping the hell out of this game. It is worth the hype. If you're at all a JRPG fan or a story fan, you do yourself a disservice not playing this game.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know you like the game a lot, so you're allowed to do that. So,
and as for the rest of it, Cool, I guess. I mean, I don't have a PS5. I don't have any plans to buy a PS5, and I'm definitely not going to buy a PS5 just for this game. So, unless it gets a really, really good review and a PC port, I'll just wait for the spoiler reviews.
There we go. But yeah, it's interesting again, you know when I did that Naughty Dog project 2 months ago? Was that already 2 months ago? And I kind of went through, obviously chronologically, Naughty Dog's games, and I started noticing like what I would call development through line. And I can already, from reading this here and what I already know about Naughty Dog games and the through line, I can already see how this fits into the ne like the next piece and how it sort of flows through. Again, I could be wrong about every single thing I just said regarding the game, because all I know is the words that Neil's spoken about, the things I've read in the trailer. That's, yeah, I know about as much as the public does. So, but all these things make sense to me. I wonder with the, because Neil's also talked about the loneliness that you might feel, or that Jade might feel in this game because she's on her own. So when you're saying about the heavy script, which obviously Neil has done that before, I wonder if it might really lean into that and kind of, because I assume she has a past and that will connect in maybe an interesting way. So maybe the dots could line up that way. So we shall see. All right, let's move on to something. My phone wasn't reacting to me then. Move on to something a bit less interesting, but it almost feels like a somewhat of a formality. We have the information on who is going to be the three different, but spread across two versions, EAFC 26. Yes, there's going to be another FIFA game, in case some of you thought there wasn't going to be for some reason, of those additions. So this comes to us from EAFC itself. It says, "You asked, Zlatan is back." I don't know who actually asked that, but okay. It says, "Presenting your FC 26 Ultimate Cover Edition. See the full reveal on July 16th. There is a very far. I'll talk about the actual trailer in a minute, but it's Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who has played for Manchester United. He was very good when he played for Man United. He's played for actually quite a few clubs. I probably can't list them all because there's so many, but most of the big clubs. I think he finished his career at AC Milan. So he is actually, I believe he is retired. I haven't heard of him playing for anybody in the last couple of years. So this might be a rare case where the cover star is actually somebody who's not playing football at the moment. Unless I'm wrong about that. But yeah, so he's the cover star of the Ultimate Edition. And then it says here, Jude Bellingham and Jamal Musiala both share the FC 26 standard cover. I'm actually less familiar with Musiala. I do know some of Bayern Munich's team, which is who he plays for. And then, of course, Jude Bellingham played for England, played for Borussia Dortmund, and, of course, plays for Real Madrid at the moment. But he should be playing for Man United because we should have bought him. But that's another story for another time. Yeah, I'm trying to think of the last time they had, like, essentially two different sets of cover stars for two different versions. But that's EA's way of doing what EA does. I didn't really understand. There's not much to talk about. Zlatan is cool. And he's on the Ultimate Edition. Obviously, I'm not going to buy that. But and then Jude and Musiala are on the standard version. So they put a trailer out, and it starts off with a cinematic, like, you can see the sweat on their faces. How good does this look? And then it takes a bit of a turn and comes up with, like, you know when trailers sometimes these days have actual social media comments included, and it's sort of like, why don't you show us this? Why don't you show us that? And they started it off slow by actually showing us the new things they've put in the game, and then it just essentially went this, 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 and this, and it just sped through a bunch of stuff. The problem with, now I would kind of definitively say in the last 2 years, which I think is since the FC label took over, obviously once they fell out with FIFA, because it used to be called FIFA, of course. I think the the two, because I think it was, yeah, EAFC 24 and 25, because I think FIFA 23 was the last FIFA game, have definitively gotten noticeably worse in the last two. So the kind of the problem you've come across now, and the trust issue, even though, yet again, what is... I'll tell you already what's going to happen. A lot of people are going to buy this game because it's FIFA, and because it's the same thing every year of... Some of the people who play this game feel like they need to get it because it's the newest one. Not because of any other real reason, not because they're excited or they want it or there's something interesting about it. It's because it's the newest one. I do also get the fact that, okay, there's a bunch of popular people, a bunch of different popular people that stream this game, and of course in terms of them spending $70 on it every year, they'll get that back easily in, you know, stream numbers, sponsors, super chats, you know, probably easily within the first day that they play it, if not earlier than that. So it doesn't really affect those people as much. But what will happen yet again is this game will come out, and even in the trailer they said this is new, that's new, and I admittedly couldn't really be bothered to kind of because they started literally speeding through their different features, and I was sort of like, okay, I don't know why you're doing that. The game will come out, it will show you that a bunch of new stuff is there, it will come out in a broken state, maybe not broken but substandard set state rather. You'll then see videos of EAFC 26 is broken, EAFC 26 is unfixable, it's in a terrible state, EA, what have you done, EA, you've ruined the game, you know, all those sorts of similar headlines, because the same thing happened last year, and the same thing happened the year before, again, most notably the last 2 years, and then people will make their videos talking about how certain things don't work, and this doesn't work, and there's this glitch, and that glitch, and every other, you know, all the normal kind of stuff. Or one of the newer things, which is you go to read a piece of text on the game, and it will literally say something like "insert player name" or "insert text here." You actually see that sometimes on the game. Obviously, those are placeholders where text is supposed to be, but in the actual released version of the game, in multiple spots, it usually comes up with "insert this here," and you can tell it's not been finished off. Just a normal piece of text. And that pops it up in lots of different places. And then they'll put out a patch. It'll be slightly better, but still not great. And then it will probably just... The same thing will probably happen the year after as well. So this is why it's kind of refreshing when you do see a game like Rematch come along. That, okay, doesn't try to do the same thing that FIFA does at all. But it's at least a different, fresh approach. And at least the game works very well, at least so far. But this is the problem, because this is both a problem with two series that I really like, which is Call of Duty and FIFA, unfortunately. But the two problems with literally both series is they don't have enough competition, and specifically more with FIFA, because they've gobbled up pretty much all the licenses and all the names and the kits and the Champions League stuff and everything else. If someone else tries to make a similar football game, you can, but you're not going to have the shine to you, because you're not going to have the names and the kits and the players' faces and, you know, all that license stuff. It doesn't mean you can't make a good football game, it just means you can't make one with all of those, you know, presentation parts. Because I don't know what PES is doing these days. I literally don't even know what that game series is anymore, because that was, of course, the other one that was actually competing for a piece of time. But yeah, I just... Yeah, I thought I'd talk about this all in one bunch. But for those of you curious, go and check out the trailer and then see what I mean by they start showing you certain things and like this is different, that's different, and then just speed through a bunch of information for some reason. So, yeah. Anyway, Robert, any thoughts on EAFC 26?
Well, I'm not really a sports game guy. I've made that clear several times. As for the broken part, I mean, this is an annualized game, so you know it's just going to be basically the same thing you had last year. Whatever they changed to, you know, make it justified to spend another $80 on it, it's going to have 9 billion cosmetic purchases. Because they gotta make their money after they make their money.
Yep.
But past that, I honestly don't care. I truly, emphatically cannot describe how I do not care.
The thing I find kind of a bit amusing is the trailer seems to make a really big deal that Ibrahimovic is on the cover, and there's the slogan of like, "You asked, Ibrahimovic is back." I don't remember seeing that written anywhere on any thing, really. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not like annoyed he's in the game or disappointed. I'm not really bothered on who the star is, although it's just curious to see who they pick. But yeah, I don't know where that came from. So, anyway, for those of you that wanted Ibrahimovic, I guess you got what you wanted. So, let's move on to my last piece of news. Where was? There it is. So, Santa Monica Studios, of course, responsible for the God of War games, both 2018 Ragnarok and I believe the older ones as well. Put out a. I think this is a scene just from maybe the second game. Put it out on the 15th of July, which was a couple of days ago. And it says Loki will go, Atreus. Atreus remains. And it says God of War Ragnarok. There was a. I think it meant round to managing to read it. It was something to do with Jason Schreier from Bloomberg said about what Santa Monica Studios' next game might be, because there was some debate about, or I guess confusion about whether it will be a new IP or a new God of War game. Now, of course, the thing with them making a new God of War game is they said that this particular saga was concluded after the second game, which it sort of was, but the game does a thing of. We've concluded this part, but it leaves small doors open and stuff. Like one for Atreus is kind of left open. As somebody who has spoken a fair bit about Kratos himself and about the series, now again, just in my opinion, I think the series is a tad overrated. Of course, people can say that about the games that I like as well, or anybody can say that about any series of games. Because there's a rumor at the moment that this next game, whether it would be like a Miles Morales style smaller game or a DLC or something, that it could be set around Atreus. I personally, now apart from the TV show, which I think got restarted at one point, because I'm curious to see what they would do with the TV show, because that would be the only and avenue I'm really kind of interested in. Not only do I kind of not care to play another God of War game because you kind of ended the last one in a decent spot. Again, I know it's a big IP, and when you look at Sony, it's what they've got: Horizon, Last of Us, God of War, Uncharted. What's their other big IP that they've got? Those are like the big as Spider-Man, things like that, obviously, and all that kind of thing. So I know it's a big franchise for them, but. I would care even less about a game where I play as Atreus than I would about a game going back to Kratos. It's just my main issue kind of with it was with the two new games and okay, Kratos is now a father and this, that, and the other, and he's changed. I just felt like his character development didn't budge. It didn't really move forward too much. I know he's got the thing of, he used to be this god killer and he's trying to move on from that and be a better person and everybody tries to tell him that in the games, but he sort of pushes it away, which is an interesting angle to take because it's a sort of sequel part to his past and his life has changed. But I just didn't think that moved forward enough. Should I spoil something from God of War Ragnarok? It's a gameplay spoiler. I'm not sure if I should, but then I think if you wanted to play Ragnarok by now, you would
You would
have.
have.
Yeah. You play as Atreus at one point. Which it's not a story spoiler. I haven't told you that someone's died. You play as Atreus at some point, and you team up with is it Brock, Gendry, one of them two brothers. I didn't really like playing as him. Now, granted, if you come back, you do an Atreus game, you could completely do a fresh version of his gameplay, and it could be more interesting. But I thought I'd talk about this, seeing as God of War's a big IP. People have been wondering what Santa Monica Studios is doing next. I think Was Ragnarok 2022? Because God of War 2018 was, well, 2018. And then I think the next game was 4 or 5 years after. So it's about 22 or 23. So the question's been, because they said this was the last of the saga, so what have they been doing next? Have they been doing a new IP? Now they could have been doing whatever this might be and the new IP, because I think they're very, very good developers. Like, from a video game standpoint, it's pretty good. So I'd like to see what they could do with something new. Anyway, Robert, what are your thoughts on if Santa Monica does a new IP or an Atreus game or what they could do next?
Well, obviously, I'd rather them do a new IP, but if they have enough fan support and fan interest in doing an Atreus game, I'm definitely going to not say, no, you can't do that, do something else. Because at the end of the day, they need to make a game that people want to buy. So if they do a new IP, great. If they do a, Atreus game, great. Just make the game not buggy at launch. That's all I ask.
True. Yeah, true. The one thing I would be kind of interested in, because I never did properly play the old games, is if you do a full remake of the old ones in a collection. I don't really want them ported, because I'm not really interested in that, but modern controls, modern graphics and that sort of thing. Because I wonder what that would do to my opinion on Kratos. It might change it, and I'm very open to that. So, cause I think it was, what, three, four, maybe five games. I know there was like a few PSP games and spin-offs and stuff, but I think there was the original God of War 1, 2, and 3. So, I'd be curious to kind of maybe play those, but we'll see what this actually ends up being. But this was posted by them themselves, so there's clearly something going on. Unless it was just sort of, let's share some good times and good memories. I don't know. So, anyway. All right, that's all my news for this week. What have you got?
I got a lot of stuff. Ubisoft has decided, hey, we haven't been horrible people in at least 20 minutes. We need to change that. So, if you remember a while back, the French publisher announced an unnamed subsidiary, partially owned by Tencent, after a 1.16 billion euro investment, which they shuffled off the IPs for Assassin's Creed, Far Cry and Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six to this autonomous subsidiary. And it's in no way, shape, or form, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, a way to close Ubisoft Prime, clear out their debt by not paying it, and then having the valuable IPs somewhere else. That's totally not what they're doing. Wink, wink, wink. So today, Ubisoft named the co-CEO of this new spin-off. So, the founder and CEO named his son. Yes, Charlie
Interesting.
Guillemot is now the co-CEO along with Christophe Daenerys. I know I'm pronouncing that wrong. I'm sorry. It was a former head of Ubisoft Montreal to be co-leaders of this totally legitimate company.
Yeah, it's keeping it in the family, which can be a nice thing, a good thing sometimes, but I don't think that's what this is. So, yeah. So I'm assuming this is the sort of same one we spoke about, was like a month ago or something? It was quite recently, wasn't it? Where they like set up this weird secret new company or something, and everyone's like, okay, what is Ubisoft doing here? So,
Yeah, they're
which.
getting sued over it, but the article didn't have any information on any kind of update from the lawsuit.
Probably might take a while with those sorts of things. But yeah, what is there new to say about Ubisoft? I suppose they have, to me, almost kind of become, not in the same kind of way, but ended up being what Konami was about 3 years ago, which is a company that, and granted, Ubisoft doesn't, as far as I know, have pachinko machines, but become a studio that sort of. They've got so many IP that they're just not really doing anything with. And it's actually even kind of curious to me that any of Ubisoft's bots are an Astrobot. We'll talk about Astrobot near the end, by the way, because I know there's the new levels. But somebody wrote in about that, so we'll get to that later. But yeah, even Ubisoft played nice with Astro Bot. It's interesting actually that Ubisoft did eventually, and we'll talk about Square Enix shortly on that front, but it took Square Enix the longest to do that. So, but yeah, like Rayman, Splinter Cell, like what are you doing with those two? People want games from those two. What's happened with the, wasn't it supposed to be a Splinter Cell remake?
Like 9 or 10 different times it's been supposedly a Splinter Cell.
Yeah, I think that was announced like 4 or 5 years ago. Again, could be in development. They were supposed to do a Prince of Persia remake, which, granted, looked really awful when they first showed it off. Don't know what's going on with that, if that's got cancelled. Assassin's Creed has turned into something else. It's only really, like, Just Dance that seems to be consistent for them, right? Like
consistent sales, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And still comes out on the Wii or something, as far as I remember. But yeah, that seems to be their only kind of consistent cared for series. And then of course they do Far Cry games now and again. But yeah, it's just a shame when you do have a company that does have so much IP, and it's never the IP that has the problem. Like there's nothing inherently wrong with Far Cry, there's nothing wrong with Rayman, and there's nothing wrong with Splinter Cell. You might not have all those games from all those series be really good, but that's not because of what Rayman or Splinter Cell is, that's because the people who've been put in front of doing those games, and again, there hasn't been a game of, and I'm not counting Rabbids, I mean a game actually with Rayman in it. I don't even remember when the last one was. Splinter Cell's been inactive since Last of Us was born in 2013, so like that's a good 12 years. Apart from, you know, the mobile games and whatever else Splinter Cell's been put into. Remember they were supposed to do an animated show, no idea where that is. I remember they were supposed to do a Division film with Jake Gyllenhaal, no idea where that is. That was announced a while ago. Skull and Bones was in development for about 45 years and then had the single weirdest presentation I've ever seen at a game presentation. Although if you want to call that a game, like a game presentation, then that's even a stretch. That game is come and gone, not talked about. Now I'm just thinking of the meme of is it a dog that sits in a chair with a room on fire and goes, this is fine? Yeah,
everything is fine.
That's what I've just thought of. So but yeah, the only two real ways to solve this problem, A, is not by doing this weird second company with a family member in charge, is to either sell the IP that people care about to somebody else that cares about it, or just refresh your whole studio company, really. I'm not necessarily talking about developers. I'm, you know, definitely talking about, as I call them, the people in the suits. Because it's also frustrating that the amount of times I've heard, whether it's a TV, game, show, or film, for different studios, where the people who are making things at that place really want to make certain stuff, but executives and people, again, people in suits, get in the way and tell them, no, you've got to make this instead. So you've got the people in the place that want to make the thing that everyone wants to make, but then for whatever reason, the people in the suits want to do the thing that doesn't make any sense and that nobody wants. So, because not to throw shade at Warner Brothers, because we're not talking about them here, there was a rumor at one point that there was 3 games that was pitched, which was a Green Lantern game, a Superman game, and the Suicide Squad game, and the executives picked the Suicide Squad game, and we all know how that went. So, anyway, what do you think of this Ubisoft situation?
I think it's just ridiculous, and I'm honestly shocked they haven't gone bankrupt already.
Yeah, yeah. What did they last put out? Is it Shadows, right?
Yeah, Shadows in February.
Yeah. Yeah, well, slightly after that, I think, but that was this year. I'm not sure what they've got for this fall, so we shall see. All right, what else do you want to talk about?
Up next is possible leak for the pricing of the Microsoft-branded ROG Ally, and if the prices do match the leak, I honestly don't see anybody buying it just because it's too expensive. So a Spanish gaming website, 3D Yugos, I'm guessing that's how it's pronounced,
Possibly.
spotted what looked like leaked listings for both the Ally and the Ally X on the Asus store. Converted to US dollars, the Ally is roughly 700, with the X variant up to 1,050. The pricing has since been removed, but if it does prove to be correct, it'll be the most expensive game console released by Xbox ever by a considerable margin, because they've never had one go over 500.
Yeah.
And while the specs on it, they look really good, they're not terrible, but $1,000 is way too much to ask for a handheld.
Yep. I agree. I agree. Hopefully it got removed because it was wrong, because that is very, very expensive. I sat here and I took the piss out of the PS5 Pro
Oh, we
because it
both
was
did.
And then I compared it to PS3, and some people laughed at me, but I still think I was correct. So if this is gonna match, although okay, let's do. I won't do a whole thing on this like I did before, because remember I compared it to the PS3, the PS5 Pro to the PS3 because of the similar price numbers and focused on what they could both do at launch. Now, if you just sit here and say, okay, you're being given $700 to specifically spend on a PS5 Pro or an Xbox Ally, what am I going to choose? I'm going to still go with an Xbox Ally. It would just be better, I think. Now, okay, I still prefer the PS5 library of games, but then if you look at this thing's supposed to be, tied in with Discord. It's got Steam game things on it. It's got obviously your Xbox games. You can do the Game Pass thing. It's got, I think they said you don't have to only stream games. You can play them like offline from the thing. So that boosts that quite a bit. Plus, it looks really nice as well, and it looks like it probably plays quite nice. So yeah, just to put that one out there for that comparison. Even if it still did cost, let's say the 1,050 that you said, I still think that's worth more than the PS5 Pro, because then you still don't need to spend $700 to play PlayStation 5 games. You can just buy a normal one like I've got and just play them anyway. So, yeah. What do you think in regards? Let's say this is $700. Which of the two would you prefer to get?
Honestly, I wouldn't really get either, and that's nothing against either build or either setup. It's just I really don't do portable gaming that much. I mean, I have my Switch 1 that I've used once in the last year, and that's because I was flying down to Florida to visit my parents over Christmas break. And that's literally the last time I powered it on. It's sitting on the dock, to get updates, but I haven't turned it on since. I'm still on the fence on whether or not I want to sell it. Not because I don't think it has no value. It definitely has value, especially with all the bull crap Nintendo's doing with the Switch 2. But I don't know if I want to sell it because I'm just not using it, or if I just don't want to sell it because I don't want to need it in the future and not have it.
Very true. All right, so we'll see how this goes with the price. I'm gonna just take the guess they removed it because it was wrong, because that's what I'm hoping is also the situation. So we'll see. What else do you want to talk about?
Well, speaking of predictions, we got another wild one here from an investment firm. Obviously, GTA 6 is coming out in about a year. It's not a question of whether or not GTA 6 will be a hit, but how big and how far the impact will be. Video game venture capitalist firm Convoy recently released its projections for GTA 6. And the number and the time frame boggle comprehension. According to Josh Chapman, a managing partner of Convoy, shared that their company's GTA 6 forecast on LinkedIn would be the game would generate $7.6 billion in revenue in the first 60 days after launch.
That's bold.
Yeah.
Bold prediction.
Yep.
Do I
Now,
think
if it
that's
does that, that'll be impressive, because right now various gaming circuits, gaming websites are estimating that the game has been had the game has had a $2 billion budget, which I'm not surprised. They've been working on it since basically they got GTA Online stabilized and playable, and the GTA Online makes them a ton of money, so they were never under a time crunch. They were never under a financial crunch. They could just do all the things.
Yep. Indeed. Okay, so do I think, can you just read out these two numbers again?
Yes, 7.6 billion in the first 60 days.
60 days.
So 2 months. Now,
Okay.
we have seen, you know, games blow up like that. Like Rockstar sold like 12 million copies in the first weekend. I think eventually Hogwarts Legacy tapped out or topped off at 22 million copies. I mean, hell, that indie game from way back, Valheim, did like 6 million in the first 3 months. And that was one of those three people project games.
Yeah. So do I think that's possible? I'd have to lean towards yes, because it's GTA, and I don't know what number isn't on the table. Whether or not that'll actually happen, I think it's a bit early to predict that yet. I think it depends on, because obviously this game's going to have GTA Online stuff, because Rockstar aren't stupid. Because game sales will get you very far, but it'll only get you so far. I think that's going to depend on how quickly, because it could, for all I know, it could be day one, this game integrates itself with GTA Online and you're good to go. But I don't know what the plan is for that yet, because they obviously it's very early. But I think if you get GTA Online integrated with this within those 60 days, then yes, I think that's possible. Because that's when they'll start like really raking in some like additional money as well. I think that, what was it, last game I saw that made, I think it was Modern Warfare 2, the 2022 version, made $1 billion in its first weekend. I don't know if that was Friday to Monday, Saturday or something. I don't know what they counted as the weekend, because that's finicky. But I remember reading that when Modern Warfare 2 came out, and that was within 1 weekend. So, and yes, I think GTA is still bigger than COD, because even at the three juggernauts that I describe, which is FIFA, COD, GTA, even though GTA is a lot less regular than those two, because obviously the other two come out every year, I still think GTA is a much bigger game than those two. Which, like, because you look at something like GTA and FIFA or EAFC, whatever, and how much money those make every year, and they come out every year. Not that you could do it in the same way, although I'm sure they could if they tried. Imagine what GTA would do if it came out every year. Like, would just a new 20-hour story every year. Obviously, throughout the year, you'd update GTA Online with new stuff anyway. So if you had a situation where, let's say, once a year, you had, you know, GTA 6, 7, then 8, then 9, or maybe you start calling different things, and all the new game would be is new online stuff, which would be coming out anyway, and then a new, you know, 15 to 20 hour story, you'd really start, unless that would dilute it in a way that I'm not thinking of, but, yeah, I wonder what that would do. But anyway, what do you think, these numbers are possible, or what would you, what's your kind of prediction?
Although I think there's a greater than zero chance. Yeah, I mean, anything's possible. It's really going to depend on two factors. How much the game is at launch, because if they launch it at 70 and they launch it at 100, that's going to be much, much different in terms of revenue generated. And remember, because the article didn't say profit or, you know, anything like that. It was revenue generated. The other thing would be, if there's a day, same day release for PC. Because you remember, it took them forever
oh, yeah,
to get
yeah.
GTA 5 on the PC.
It's true. Yeah. I don't imagine this thing's going to be on Switch 2. So,
Nope.
before you break. Oh dear. But yeah, probably, Series X, PS5. I wouldn't imagine PS4. So, we shall see. We'll see how that goes. All right, what else you want to talk about?
The last thing that I have is that we have a new world record for internet speed and distance. So, research team in Japan achieved a 1 billion megabits per second
Oh wow.
internet speed over a 1,123 line mile, which is currently 5.3 million times faster than the average US connection. Now, obviously, this is research. This isn't going to hit consumers anytime within the next decade, but it just shows you internet speed is nowhere near topping out. Now, what you could do and use all that speed for, I have no idea. Unless I'm streaming and playing an online video game at the same time, I don't even use a fraction of the speed I have. But the plan that I have with the internet speed offered, it just doesn't make any sense to go lower. It's like going from $60 a month to $50 a month, but I'm be going from a gigabit to 500 megabits. That's worth my $10. I don't use it, but I have it in case I need it. And it's like I said, it's worth my $10.
Yeah. But I bet that billion could download COD with all its packs very quickly.
Oh yeah, that's
So
basically start download, download finished.
yeah.
It that speed that is literally instantaneous.
It's weird with that because I've reinstalled the whole game once before and it's taken like 15 hours. But there was once, I think about 2 months ago, and I reinstalled it for some reason and had it in rest mode and it was done in 2 hours. And then there's other times where it's done in like five or six or so. I don't know. So different speeds and different times and stuff. But yeah, I'm also trying to think of yeah, a useful scenario where. Unless you're doing something like, okay, how many things could you have going? Let's say you're streaming, you're installing a game, you're playing an online game, or you're installing, let's say, a bunch of games. Even then, a billion would like quite easily be able to handle all of that. So, but it's very cool to kind of know that that can do that. So it just depends on what scenarios we use that for. So yeah, what do you think of this?
It's cool.
Yeah.
As a tech guy, I'm always been of the opinion of innovation, make it better. If you want to look at the conservation, anything like that, make it better. Look at the TVs, even going up to the early 2000s, a lot of lead in the glass. Don't have that anymore. A lot of weight, so shipping, cost more fuel. Don't have that much as much anymore. Refrigerators hold more, use less energy. Same with washers, dryers, water heaters, pretty much any major electronic appliance compared to what it was 20 years ago. It's thinner, uses less material, and is better. And so this just falls into that category of, what material are they making the internet line out of? Don't have to use copper hard lines anymore. Fiberglass is wildly expensive. The last dollar amount I saw was from 2008, and to lay a mile of fiber optic cable was 60 grand.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy. Right, cool. I think that did you say that was your last thing? I can't remember. All right, let's move on to yeah, our last piece, which is emails and feedback. If you've got any thoughts on anything we talked about, what do you think of the intergalactic rumors, the God of War rumors, the players that have been picked for EAFC, or anything else that we talked about on this podcast? Let us know what you're playing. If you're playing Expedition 33 or anything else like that. let us know. Matthew@entertainmenttalk.org, social media, eTalkUK and Entertainment Talk, and there's information in your show notes. We've already went through Josh's one, so let's move on to Harrison. Says, so lads, halfway through the year, what are you both thinking for Game of the Year? Now, you didn't say your Game of the Year, so I'm guessing you mean in general. Well, Expedition 33 will obviously be one of them. Death Stranding 2, that seems to have a lot of buzz right now. I don't think they count things like Oblivion Remake, would they? But that went down really well. Nintendo's not really put out anything this year. What else is there? Won't be Assassin's Creed. What are the other big games? Final Fantasy VII Rebirth was last year, wasn't it? Yeah, that was last year. I'm drawing a bit of a blank. What games can you think of?
I would definitely put as a dark horse, Split Fiction.
Oh yes,
because it was a really good game, really well received, really great sales. Obviously, you know, I can't not say Expedition 33.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going through games that have been released, and you know, Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 definitely could be in that discussion. I doubt it will be, but it could. Yeah, I'm just looking at everything that's been released this year, and nothing stands out. I mean, I would not put Avowed on it. It's not a bad game, but, you know, didn't do anything. I can't in good conscience put Monster Hunter Wild, because even though it sold really, really well, even now, in 4 months past it, actually technically 4.5, it's still badly, badly optimized for the PC. Runs fine on consoles. It's just they still haven't fixed the PC version yet. So if it's broken on one platform, I can't call it a game of the year. It has to work on all three. I'm just looking through games that have been released, and nothing has jumped out.
I was trying to think if there was another big RPG come out, but I think I'm thinking...
I mean, there was technically Oblivion Remaster, but I don't count remasters.
Yeah. I remember the Game Awards did at one point, so I wonder if they'll consider that.
They probably will, but...
Yeah. As much as I love South of Midnight, I don't think that will be considered. It's just not really talked about enough. What games is like Sony? So you said games so far. I was going to say Ghost of Yote, but that hasn't come out yet. There's other things like Hell Is Us, and there's a few others as well that aren't quite coming to mind.
Doom the Dark Ages maybe, but it didn't really hit hard on PC. Speaking of Yote, did you ever watch the State of Play on that?
I did, and I only just remembered it, so I didn't put it in my notes.
So it's forgettable.
I think it was because it was like the day after we did the podcast, and I've done so many things since that Thursday, or whatever day it was on, that I've only just remembered it. So,
Tainted Grail, Fall of Avalon, came out.
Yeah.
I've seen people playing it. It hasn't really blown up anything. If they're counting expansions, obviously Elden Ring Night Rain is going to be in there.
Yeah, because Urtree was in there, wasn't it?
Urtree was in there, so more than likely Night Rain is going to be in there.
I wonder if they choose, I don't think it's as big as that, but the Lies of P Overture. I think it's supposed to be shorter, though. So
possible.
Maybe. Because that's the thing now, you don't really have, like, you have your full games, right? And then you've got kind of games that are considered DLC because they're slightly, they're not quite big enough to be the sort of $40 thing, like a Miles Morales. Like, that's not a DLC, that is its own game. But then you have a thing like Lies of P Overture, which they didn't call a smaller game. They specifically, I mean, you need to have for some reason you need the main game and to be at chapter 9 to be able to even access it, but so that's not like whatever. So yeah, we'll see. There's a few selections there, but I think the big one that does stand out right now is probably Expedition 33. So yeah.
And I'm just going through the games that are coming out later this year, and nothing really is, you know, looking okay. Look at me. Because it's all either old stuff, remasters, or really old games that are getting a new release. Like Gradius Origins is getting a release. Shinobi Art of Vengeance is getting a release. Indiana Jones DLC is out in September.
Oh, yeah.
Garfield Kart 2. Yeah, that'll be a big seller.
Mafia of the Old Country.
Yeah, Mafia of the Old Country. But that's... I think that's a remake of one, isn't it?
No, that's a fourth game. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Little Nightmares 3. That one might be a contender.
Yeah.
Ninja Gaiden 4, possible contender. If it wasn't going through so much of a clusterfuck right now, maybe The Outer Worlds 2. But I got a bad feeling there's going to be drama with that.
Mm. Yeah, we'll see. I wonder if they'll consider the Metal Gear remake.
Oh, Snake Eater or Delta or whatever it's called?
Yeah. August. So, because I just remember one year they considered, was it the Resident Evil 4 remake? So, the Game Awards aren't, like, against doing that. Yeah, so, anyway, there's a good chunk of games there. Let's move on to our last two. Beth says, Matt's take on Bungie taking over The Last of Us Online is interesting. Would you have trusted Bungie to do that? That is something I didn't really specify when I've talked about that before. The answer is no. But the whole kind of conceit of what I was talking about was because Bungie came in and basically kind of said to Naughty Dog, like, unless you dedicate yourself to this game, this isn't going to... Well, it will work, but you'll have to dedicate yourself to it and not be, you know, a single-player narrative studio anymore. And then the idea was brought up at one point if Bungie were to kind of sort of take over or, you know, be a developer on it. No, I wouldn't trust them to do that, but that would have been one of the options to keep the game alive. That would be interesting, though, as well, because, like, I talked about this on different times when people do moan about things with the first or the second game and then with the first or the second season. The interesting change that happens is, like, let's say with season 2 when there was a few changes and things like that. And because Craig was the actual show's showrunner, Neil was as well, but Craig was the main TV person there because Neil's not a TV person. And whenever anything went quote-unquote wrong or not favored, people started pointing the finger at Craig because he was, you know, the guy. But then when someone didn't like something about the first or second game, they pointed the finger at Neil, even though with the first and second season, Neil still obviously oversaw it, was the second showrunner, co-showrunner, whatever the title is, and was still there and would still have obviously cleared every decision made. But because Craig was the main person, the finger was pointed at him. And what would be interesting to see, if you then have a Last of Us product that comes out, let's say online, again, we know it's dead, but this is a hypothetical scenario. If something goes wrong with Last of Us Online and Naughty Dog's name is not the main name on it, again, it would be, you know, in association with Naughty Dog, or there would be the second splash screen or whatever. But if it was then a main developed Bungie game, people would point the finger at them and not Naughty Dog, because then they would be the name that's, you know, the forefront name. Do you know what I'm trying to understand? Trying to explain, mm-hmm. like, kind of the way that the blame gets sort of shifted, because, like, oh, even though the person that you were pointing at before because you didn't like something is still working on the thing and still very, very, very heavily involved, because there's now a different main name, Not that people were looking for a different name to point at, because they still kind of pointed the finger at Neil anyway, but because Craig is now there, he's now like the problem person. And it would just be interesting if it wasn't Naughty Dog, if it wasn't Craig, if it wasn't Neil, it was then Bungie. Again, I don't want any of these people to get, you know, hated or the finger pointed at them. I'm just saying, if you had Naughty Dog as the secondary thing and Bungie's name comes up first, and then let's say something didn't work about the game or people didn't like a certain choice, the finger pointing would get changed again towards Bungie. But unfortunately, we won't see how that will play out. Or if it wasn't Bungie, if it was somebody else, if it was Bluepoint, or, you know, same kind of example, the finger would still be pointed at somebody. It would just be pointed at somebody different. Even though, again, if Bungie, again, hypothetical scenario, if they went to do something and Naughty Dog was overseeing it, and Naughty Dog said no to something, which is run by Neil, who had the finger pointed at him before, some people wouldn't think of that as the same way. They would just see Bungie and just do it that way. So, anyway. But no, I wouldn't have... Look, they'd done... obviously a great job with Halo, what they did. I used to love, you know, the Halo games when I played them in high school and stuff, especially Halo 3. Halo 4 was very good. 5 and Infinite weren't very good. I've not played, like, ODST or whatever. From what I understand, like, Bungie up until a certain point with Destiny 2... Sorry, Destiny up until a certain point with Destiny 2 was regarded as very well done, and then somewhere along the lines of them being purchased for $8 billion, which was wildly overpriced, and then I remember there was a big DLC that came out and it like didn't go down well, and like ever since that kind of post-purchase new DLC point, they've like fallen out of favor and stuff, not just from their critical reception, but and then there's been changes at the studio or something like that, and then of course the Marathon thing happened and all of that. So the current Bungie I wouldn't trust to do that. To do Last of Us Online. So, yeah. Anyway, would you have trusted Bungie in that scenario?
No, because they just steal other people's art.
True. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we talked... Yeah, that... yeah, just remembered that. That was the... is it the Twitter story you talked about once?
Someone... Marathon.
Yeah, yeah. To do that, yeah, I just remembered. So, but yeah, we'll see what the future for Bungie holds, I suppose. And lastly, Abed writes in and says, so, any thoughts on the last Astrobot levels and the Chosen Bot? Do you think we get any more? The do you think you get any more point has been very heavily debated on the Astrobot subreddit. People are trying to find things, which I tried to do on the stream that I did as well. So... I did do another stream for it. It was, I didn't go around the entire Crash site and look at everybody again. I focused on the newer DLC characters, not just the new 5 ones, but the some of the ones from before, because I've already covered the original characters in a different stream. One thing that a lot of people have pointed out is you have your main galaxies in the middle, and if you zoom the map out, which some people have done, there's the Christmas level, which was amazing that they did. There was like 10 bots in there. All of them are brilliant. That's off to the right. And there's this weird just gap on the left. And some of them have wondered, okay, because October's not that far away, and that could be Halloween, could be a different themed, maybe some horror characters. Like someone said Until Dawn, someone said Sweet Tooth, could put those in there. You don't really need any more Resident Evil characters because you've got most of those. Maybe some other ones. Someone said about doing Easter, an Easter level. I'm not sure what you'd put in that, but that would be all the way through to next April, wouldn't it? So, because the only difference with this, once you finish the big, massive last level, it specifically comes up with thanks for playing, as in like a more of a definitive sense. Now, I've not seen anything from Team Asobi saying these are the last 5 levels, thank you and all that, but it does say that at the end. So nobody really quite knows yet, because of course at some point they do need to move on and make their next game. The bots themselves, I liked them. There's five. One of them was obviously Atsu, which is the new character from Ghost of Yote. So I won't spoil who the other four were because they literally came out last week. There was one who I had no idea who it was, which is a curious thing. And then once I looked it up slash found out who it was, I still didn't know who it was, which again is fine. There was two other very interesting ones, and then one from a game that I wouldn't say I love, but I like a lot, and it was cool to see that bot in there. I don't really want to talk about the other two because those have some conversations around them. So, but they have good selections. It was good to see some of them in there. So that was cool. But yeah, will they include? I don't know. A Halloween level on the left makes sense, I guess. Symmetry to Christmas on the right, more festive and nice, and then Halloween more horror and dark on the left side of the map, maybe. Because for the actual current time trial levels, I don't think you'll get more of those. Like in the current, I think it's called Vicious Void, and then the other one's called something else. Because it doesn't mean you have to do more time trial levels, because the Christmas one itself is just one massive level where you use a bunch of stuff, and it's just one massive level. There's no actual time trial stuff in there. So, while they might be done with the time trial stuff, you know, October's soon-ish. We'll soon be there, won't we? So maybe that could be the kind of next thing. Anyway, what's your thoughts on that? Do you think they'll add more, or what do you think might happen?
I mean, they can always add more. It's not like
True. They're
breaking lore or, you know, breaking content out of a game map or anything. That game is designed to just constantly add stuff.
Mm.
And they're not charging you for it, which is also, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I still maintain my theory from before that because they've added peripherals and consoles to Playroom and they've added new characters to Astro Bot, once more PlayStation games come out, if they add those characters, so we'll have to kind of see how that goes. So, but it, like even looking around the crash site, because you do have some characters like a bit more down the back on the grass. Like Spyro's just off on the side, and he's like one of PlayStation's biggest characters. There's still like plenty of actual room there, so they could still add a bunch of things. I did see, is copium the right word to use? I did see a lot of like, hey, but I looked at this, I looked at that, and people like really, really dug into it, which I get it. We all love the game and we want to see more added because it's just cool to see who the new character is going to be every time. That's just always a fun reveal. Especially the kind of, excuse me, you pick them up, they fly towards the controller, you catch them, you get the first glimpse of them, you're like, oh, who is it kind of thing. And then if you don't quite know who it is, you can kind of zoom in, they wave at you, you look at them a bit more, and you kind of see if you can work out who it is. It's always a really, really fun process. So, unless it's like a Crash Bandicoot, and you probably know who it is straight away, because, you know, it's more noticeable. Or even a couple of times where I wasn't, like, sure who a bot was, and I looked it up, and I went, oh, it's that person, and it's always that kind of it's just a nice reveal every time. So, but yeah, even if they finish here, they've still done way more than they should or needed to have done. Because even just the main base game itself would have been even more than enough. So we'll have to wait and see. But the only last bit that makes sense is, okay, if you do a Halloween level on the left side, because I don't think you're going to add time trials to the existing two planets. So we'll have to wait and see. Alright, and that's what we got for you for this week's episode. Thank you all very much for listening. We'll be back next week, of course, to see what else is going on. In the meantime, you can find everything else that we do on entertainmenttalk.org for TV, games, films, and Merry United podcasts. This is the 17th of July, so Merry United kick off in about a month, so within the next maybe 2 weeks or so, I'll do a United cast preview, because I haven't really put my... I say there's a lot that's going on because there's nothing that's going on, because there should be more that's going on, if that makes sense. So I've not put much out there in terms of my opinions on things, but yeah, my opinions on the situation are very, very strong. So we need to get a move on. Anyway, though, it will be happening in the next maybe couple of weeks because the season will be back in August when we play Arsenal at home for the first game of the season. So check that out. Of course, there'll be still film reviews coming up. There's still Superman, which is out. I intend to see that this weekend. And then I believe it's next weekend. Yeah, Fantastic Four. So we'll see what that is like. And then any other films still hanging around, I'll try and go to see those. Do some TV season reviews at some point as well. And then, of course, maybe I'll review a rematch at some point. Depends on how deep I kind of get with the game or whatever. So maybe do that. Speaking of Avowed, I was going to check that out as well. See what that's like. Death Stranding 2 is on a short wait. It got reduced from a long wait to a short wait. So I could be talking about that next week. I don't know. But I have to wait and see what happens. Anyway, you can support all the content that we do and listen to more stuff by going to entertainmenttalk.org and podcast platforms Entertainment Talk for TV, games, films, and Marry Not a Podcast. You can support us by listening to more episodes, word of mouth in social media, and if someone mentions a thing we've podcasted on, please tell them about that podcast. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers for the ad-free podcast review options. Check that out as well if you'd like to. TV and film news, Geektown Radio is still on hiatus. Should be back soon-ish, but you can still go to geektown.co.uk and get all your TV and film news posts. There's a new Stranger Things trailer. That show's finally coming back. And some other things happening as well. So check all that out. And of course, you can find us on YouTube. By the way, if you want to see my... because I did do all the five Astrobot levels. That last one was crazy. I got all my... The best times I currently could manage. So if you want to see those, I just named them all Astrobot. You can just check those out on the YouTube channel. So if you want to see how well I did, and also watch the newest stream for the new characters, you can check that out as well on YouTube, which is Entertainment Talk Plays. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.